24/7 and online at NYPIRG.org. That's NYPIRG.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Once again, it's time for Off the Wall. It's another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Steen here with you, joined tonight by Kyle. Having trouble with that chair?
I just went to adjust it, and the entire bottom of it fell apart.
Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot.
But I think I can reach the microphone from here. I'm okay.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Something weird just opened on this computer that I'm using, though. Wow.
Okay.
That's strange. Nothing to worry about, though. We have it under control. I'm good. I'm good. I'm enjoying this weather, actually, because it's summer, but it's not. It's kind of like autumn. which I guess September, that's kind of what you get. But it's, you know, one of those non-humid kind of mild days, which I like so much.
With a tinge of that autumn approaching.
Yeah, a little tinge.
Coolness and change.
Yeah, just, you know, possibilities of what lies ahead.
Uh-huh.
You don't know. You have no idea.
No. So I certainly do not.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed you're wearing the DECSS code on your T-shirt. As you turned to look at the computer, I was starting to read that script. Am I in violation for having read it?
I've got the DECSS code printed on my back.
Okay.
And as you know, I was sued for that back in 2000. This shirt just came up in rotation.
I just want to know if I should
have all the shirts, and I just, you know, I'll take one. I don't even look at what I'm wearing. And, you know, I was wearing a Christianity is Stupid t-shirt the other day, and that got embarrassing.
It was very popular at the mosque, though.
It's popular in some places and not popular in others, but it's my Negative Land shirt, and I'll wear it as much as I please.
I'm kidding, of course. And, if I need to avert my eyes from that code at any point, please let me know.
They have a new album coming out, you know, Negative Land.
You played me something. It was fantastic, too. The video was really interesting to look at, just visually an amazing collage and a really cool message. Simple, but cool.
Maybe we'll play that song or that video on tomorrow night's show on the other radio station. Maybe.
Do you think that would be possible?
We can't play the video. Or we can play the video. You just can't see the video. But we can play the song.
Okay.
Why not? You know, sure.
I'm for it.
Well, so that's where we are right now. All kinds of fun things are happening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're still organizing a lot of the media collection here.
Yes.
WSB's thriving, I just, in case anyone was concerned.
Uh-huh.
A lot of fantastic programming, good music, and great spirit here.
Yeah.
I heard a couple shows this week. I think they were students and just really outstanding, like electronic music and good programming. So,
you can always tell when the students are playing music.
When they're back, yeah.
You can always tell.
I'm not... to throw any shade to other programmers here at the station, but it is nice to get fresh stuff,
mm-hmm.
or just a different take, or maybe even here I'll compliment them, less polished radio, more people learning and enjoying that learning curve.
Yeah, and you know what I like people talking on the radio. I don't say that just because I'm the host of a talk show. But I say that because with radio, you don't want something that just is playing music, you know, one song after another, because you can do that on any device.
Yeah.
But when you hear people talking back and forth or arguing or just enlightening you to something that you didn't know, that's interesting. That's what makes you listen. That's what it's all about. And it's good to hear people, you know, taking risks and doing things that might not seem like the kind of thing that most people would be comfortable doing. Which is, you know, basically just talking about whatever is on your mind. But I think that helps. It helped me so much throughout my entire life. My early days here at WUSB helped me learn how to express myself, and that enabled me to address many throngs of people throughout the planet when I needed them to do something.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, and it's true. There are so many related or counterintuitive skills you pick up by being a part of communication and broadcasting in this way, whether it is just music or, as you were referring, like conversation and just banter over even something simple like back announcing a playlist, stuff like that. It can be really exciting, really, and it sheds more character on the radio personalities, not to take away from the programming, but
mm-hmm.
you get a little bit of sense of like where they're coming from, what their attitude is, how they feel about either the music or whatever the discussion is
but
about.
It's good to just have that discussion, to have a back and forth, to not always agree on everything, to challenge people, because you bring that with you into life itself, and you're able to have those kinds of conversations. Many people are having trouble doing these days because, you know, they're staring at their phones, and they're not really talking to people they don't agree with. They're talking to people they do agree with on everything.
And a lot more passivity.
Uh-huh.
Is that a word? Passivity?
Yeah, it's definitely a word.
To be passive.
Mm-hmm.
I think people don't want confrontation because there's so much of it. So they get a little bit, affected and then kind of shut down.
Right.
They can't deal. And the reality is there are disagreements. And to function, you need to be able to rise to occasion and confront those disagreements or shed light on perhaps your perspective or where you come from, or what some of the language or what it means for you.
Yeah.
I think you've said this a lot. You know, shutting people down, shutting down speech, is really not a discussion, right?
So nonsense. I'm cutting you off. Sorry.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that wouldn't be right.
No, excuse me.
Right. That's wrong.
Point of order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. And you pronounced order wrong.
Oh, we're going to have a meta discussion about order?
Order. That's how you
order!
Now you got to emphasize the second syllable. That's
order!
Well, sort of like that.
You're order!
I was, Mr. Goldstein! I was say you're blowing out the transmitter. I was going to say, what's that guy's name again? The Speaker of the House of Commons?
I need a lozenge!
He's retiring at the end of October.
John Bercow.
Yeah, now, I was saying he should go on tour and just preside over meetings. He would make a fortune.
For hire?
I mean, could you imagine having him at the next USB like music library meeting, having him demand order?
Excuse me, with the right honorable general station general manager, please.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could see it. It, you know, whatever he does, I'm happy with it, but he will very much, in my mind, symbolize an era.
Anyway, I'm sorry for shutting you down out of jest.
Oh, yeah, what was I talking about?
You were talking about being shut down.
Oh, correct.
I immediately shut you down.
Right, right. No, and that had no impact. I completely derailed my own choo-choo of thought.
Yes, and but get derailed very easily.
It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's narrow gauge, believe it or not.
Learning a bit about that, narrow gauge, wide
welcome,
gauge.
Welcome to my mind. A narrow gauge mind. Wow, that's an album title.
Oh, boy.
A narrow gauge mind.
You better register it fast, because it's going to be one before the end of the show.
Hey, you know what? If you're a band out there, you need an album, that's your album. You got it. Royalty free. You can have it. Don't even have to tell me.
But let them know, so that, you know.
And send a copy to the station so we can promote it.
Mm-hmm.
We're always into new music here. But, shutting down, it's not a discussion. I think it's really hard. Like I was saying, people get overwhelmed. I think that's a bit of a understatement in this particular moment, socially, politically, you know, media landscape, whatever you're talking about at this time. It's very difficult to constantly have arguments and confrontations and in this sort of bifurcated, bipolar, really, really partisan era.
Right.
And so to that end, you have to be able to deal with stuff that you really disagree with without, you know, leaping down somebody's throat or putting your foot deeply through the other end. So,
well, I mean, the best way to do that, I think, is to stick to the facts and not go for the labeling. So
yeah.
If somebody says something to you that you find to be completely wrong, why? Why is it wrong?
Yeah.
Tell me why it's wrong without saying, you must be this kind of a person.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're shutting down a discussion and you're cheating yourself because you're not really backing up your position at all.
Yeah, it has to be about the points. But I'm going out on a limb, not even much of a limb, but it is a lot harder in the heat of a moment.
Oh, yes.
When you're passionate about something, mm-hmm. when you feel you're being wronged in some way.
It's also hard when you're surrounded by people that agree with you because, you know, then you get into a shouting match or, you know, a bunch of people, excuse me, a bunch of people against one person, which even if I'm on the side of the people that are, you know, the majority, I still don't feel right about that because
it feels like a gang.
You gang
like,
up.
You're ganging up, yeah.
I don't like gangs. I don't like mobs, even if they're on the same side.
Well, and I think those are moments, those are groups, and that kind of group think can quickly become out of control.
Yes.
It's something that you aren't going to co-sign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may at the outset, but it turns into something you're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
I think some people, without getting into politics, there's many analogous things we could relate that to. But
of course.
In the interest of fascinating conversation, we'll get into some stories.
Okay, well, there certainly are stories this week, lots and lots of stories. Okay, first of all, the bombing of the Saudi Arabian oil facility.
Isn't that too bad?
That's a real shame.
I'm beside myself. Upset.
So in case you don't know, or in case you're listening in the future, you don't know what we're talking about, the Saudi Arabian oil facility, accounting for about half their production, at least at the beginning, was bombed supposedly by Houthi rebels. Some people are saying Iran. The death toll is up to 156. And it's really horrible. All the innocent people, well, not really innocent people, because they were, oh, wait, I'm reading the wrong story here.
Wait, no, that doesn't sound right. This was...
No, I'm sorry. Those were Houthi rebels in a prison that were bombed by the Saudi-led coalition.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Well, everybody was talking about this a couple of weeks ago when it happened, right? No, you never heard of it before. Come on. You're driving on the LIE right now. Did you hear about that story at all? 156 people in a prison, bombed to oblivion by us, because, hey, we helped the Saudis too. Saudi-led coalition, that's us. No, you didn't hear a word about that? Maybe because they're already prisoners? How about all the villagers? How about all the innocent children that get bombed week after week after week in this ridiculous war that's going on in Yemen? You don't hear about that. But you bomb an oil facility, and all of a sudden that's headline news everywhere. Who cares about the damn oil? Let's use less oil. All right? Let Saudi Arabia deal with this. They had it coming. They've been bombing the hell out of people for years. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed. And they lose an oil facility? Boo-hoo. All right? I don't care if Iran was behind it. It's their fight. Let them deal with it.
All seriousness aside, I think those oil facilities have been treated very unfairly.
Well, that's one perspective to look at, but I counter that with some windmills and solar facilities, and I think they haven't been given the respect they deserve at all. You know, actually, this brings to mind something. I heard this on the radio yesterday, actually.
Yes.
This radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was talking about the wind farm, one of the wind farms that's offshore.
Yeah,
and there was a story about how they were going to be visible from the shoreline. And apparently that's a bad thing, that they could be visible from the shoreline. And, you know, I would love to see wind turbines chugging away offshore. What's so bad about that? It's a lot better than smokestacks. But the point was made, and this is a really, really good point, that people who protest against nuclear power and against fracking and things like that, they're not the NIMBY people. They're not people saying, you can do this, just not in my backyard. They're people that care about the planet and about the fact that these things, these ways of generating energy are hurting the planet. You see very few people saying, yeah, I'm opposed to wind power anywhere, because it's I can't even think of a critique for it.
Well, other than conspiracy theories.
But what kind of conspiracy theory has wind in the middle of it?
It's not worth even talking about. But it's not just Yucca Mountain people complaining about nuclear waste.
The point is, the people that don't want windmills are people that don't want windmills in their line of sight or in their backyard. But there aren't people that say, yeah, I don't want windmills, I don't want solar panels anywhere, because it's seen as clean and good in general. And that's something we need to consider. Sometimes you have to make a little sacrifice. And if seeing a windmill off the coast is your idea of a sacrifice, okay, make that sacrifice, because, we're all going to benefit in one way or another. But having a belching smokestack, I don't care if it's in your backyard or 100 miles away, it's bad for all of us no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, this goes for municipal waste, dumps that smell or leach. Yeah, that's a big problem for someone who has a close proximity to it, but their complaints and so on are valid, because that form of disposal is impacting them acutely, mm-hmm. and the rest of society in less immediate ways, but it overall is a huge detriment to our habitat. And at this point, we actually still rely on our habitats. So, there's so many other.
When are we not going to rely on our habitats? What point is that going to be? Extinction?
I think that's what we're all slowly marching towards.
I think that's the point a lot of people miss, is that we will go extinct before the planet does. The planet is going to survive one way or another. It's going to be fine. But we will be seen as the problem, and we will just simply be expunged, and that'll be it, until the next species comes around and hopefully doesn't screw things up as badly.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if you're unfamiliar with environmentalism and, what people are concerned about when they make noise on these issues, it's not necessarily their concern the Earth itself is dying or not going to be able to get to go on. It will continue to be a frosty rock out in space.
It doesn't care
whether it has habitable Earth systems that we can enjoy the benefits of, or not is surely up to us and a sorely overlooked topic as far as regulatory and other forms of leadership are concerned at this point. Mm-hmm. Although those tides are changing a little bit. But I do think that you're right about the complaining and the sort of, well, if the most you can think of is that you might have to look at something. Just take a deep breath and think about what you're looking at and what it symbolizes. And I would argue an oil derrick or a form of energy extraction technology represents a lot more that is sort of a negative than a wind turbine. I would argue that the net costs to the environment are not continuous, right? There is an initial cost in carbon to produce a wind turbine, but it ultimately is a fixed investment that is not going to continually create waste and in producing energy emit carbon. Like those should be the things that those individuals are thinking about when they're looking at a wind turbine. And I think it's very apt to point out that, yes, there is a turbine off in the distance. You may see that, but that's about it. That is the extent of the impact it will have. It will not continue to release carbon as that one particular installation is concerned. And it is ultimately, it's not as much of a risk as far as leaking and so on. And, of course, who does it empower, right? Like, is it going to continue to enrich in the coffers of an industry that itself has denied and made serious efforts to disrupt any kind of change in how we create energy, even small changes, which is, I think, the most spiteful aspect of what the fossil energy sector has done over the years.
I've been looking, while you were talking, I was looking on YouTube for live wind turbines because I want to watch them. I don't want to wait until they start becoming visible offshore, and I can't find a live cam of wind turbines. I found a wind powered camera that shows the ocean, but that's not what I want.
Yeah.
Not only do I not mind seeing them offshore, I would right now go to a YouTube page that had wind turbines playing. I think they look really nice. And you know what's really cool? Have you ever seen pieces of a wind turbine being moved from place to place on a train? They are so huge. It makes you realize what mankind is capable of, to build something so big and incredibly powerful and useful. It's like, you know, it's like the kind of thing you see in space, you know, pieces of a space station, how we can make machines that are so much bigger than we ever imagined. This is something to be proud of.
And I would argue the research and the material science that goes into the production of a windmill is so much less than what it takes to build and maintain nuclear technology. Do you know, I mean, some nuclear reactors are cooled with liquid metal, right? So the coolant itself is like sodium-based reactors and so on. They actually flow liquid metal through the reactor to take away heat from the reactor core. I mean, just the science and the amount of cost you have to do to handle the materials, let alone to produce the pumps and the piping and all the metal and technical stuff that will last for, what, I don't know, 40 years. I mean, certainly not the half-life of the isotopes they're moving around or extracting energy from via steam or whatever it is. But, again, the nuclear industry is incredibly costly, and the amount of, material, like I said, metallurgy and material science, the amount of investment and how much is top-loaded to figure out all that stuff is just monumental compared to the sort of humble technologies that are used to fabricate a large wind turbine.
Yeah, you know, nuclear power is interesting. There's cool bits of technology there, but I'm disturbed by how many people, especially somewhat progressive people, seem to think that is a valid solution to our energy problems. Let's not confuse developing technology and science and things like that with our place in the world right now. And our place in the world is nowhere near where it needs to be in order to run nuclear power plants safely, and certainly nowhere near where it needs to be as far as storing nuclear waste safely. I mean, the arrogance of us thinking, yeah, you know, we can keep that safe for 10,000 years. You can't find something that you stashed in a drawer 2 months ago, I'll bet. And people are constantly finding time capsules from 100 years ago. They have no idea what's in them. We're not very good at passing along information from year to year, century to century, eon to eon. It's not going to work. You might think that we are advanced enough to handle this. Maybe one day we will be. We're not now. And, yeah, it's cool. It's fascinating science. But please don't expose the rest of us to your learning curve where you know, whoops, I didn't know that switch released all the radioactive activity into the community. Let's try for something that's a little bit safer and you know, is maybe a little bit easier to install.
Yeah, the catastrophic failure mode of a wind turbine, though I would say, though it is really amazing, not amazing, but the failure of a windmill would be a spectacular failure, of course. It's very high up, it's a very large piece of machinery, but it is not as devastating to both humans and the environment as something on the order of industrial nuclear production. And those centralized utilities then become soft targets as far as conflict goes. So the more nuclear power plants you have, you know, if someone bombs them or targets them in a military context, you have a very big problem with both cogeneration, the ability to power yourself, but also the ability to survive all the fallout from that kind of attack. And I would also argue in the vein of military that even the thorium and some of the new reactor designs, though interesting as far as, you know, how they can consume waste and so on, it still, I think, props up a form of power that is very closely related with nuclear weapons technology. And I think that, you know, just the waste alone from reactors inside submarines and aircraft carriers and other military installations, just that waste alone, I mean, it all sits in a open pit in Washington, where I'm from. That's where they recycle decommissioned reactors, and you can look at that. They're all in a row. There they are.
Well, don't go there and look at it.
Yeah, and if anybody's interested in nuclear storage, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about as far as losing things.
Yeah, we can use your help if you can store some nuclear waste.
Well, what I would recommend, yeah, exactly. We've got a bit actually in our trunk. The film The Safest Place on Earth is a fascinating look at this storage technology. And there's some interesting reading, and there are aspects in that film that go into detail about it. But essentially, were you to find a location suitable to store nuclear waste, how would you identify it for generations, hundreds of thousands of years in the future?
English.
You have
because
to use...
you know they're going to speak English in 10,000
years. What if they don't
speak
English?
But they have to.
Yeah. So they've devised ways of marking perimeters, and a lot of it is very interesting insofar as it's like archaeological.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to like the Saturn or the... the record, the gold record.
Yeah, that got sent out into space.
Voyager 1 and Voyager
right.
2, that was basically symbolizing and coming up with all these schemes to communicate with intelligent beings who perhaps do not speak anything close to your language.
Is it possible that some of the hieroglyphics that we see in caves are actually warnings to us that there's nuclear waste behind that wall?
Yeah, the last time we had that technology, that's probably what was in the pyramids.
Wow, maybe the dinosaurs were trying to warn us about something.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we blew it.
Anyway, it's an interesting discussion, but not all we're going to talk about.
No, because we have more cheery news. And the thing is, in this day and age, you run the risk of getting overwhelmed with all the things that are going on, particularly all the bad things that are going on. And sometimes, you know, I see it in the people around me. We just kind of either just keep saying the same things over and over again, or we resign ourselves that it's just going to keep getting worse and worse, and there's nothing we can do about it. And a story like what I saw today kind of, you know, makes me feel that way too. But I know that we have to do better, and I know that we can do better. But Well, I know, Kyle, you're very familiar with this, how the state of California has its own vehicle emission standards.
Yes, these are the CAFE standards.
Right.
They're implemented in 2008.
That's right. Well, as of tomorrow, they are going away because the Trump administration is basically saying they're no longer valid. The EPA is going to say that it itself acted unlawfully by granting the state a waiver from the Clean Air Act and allowing it to develop stricter standards than those of the federal government. Now, about a dozen states have adopted California standards, which are geared towards the larger goal of curbing greenhouse gases. California has historically been allowed to have stricter emission standards due to the state's unique geography and history of intense air pollution, highlighted by the thick smog that once blanketed Southern California. Let me read that again. The thick smog that once blanketed Southern California. What that means is that's in the past. It's no longer happening. It happened in the past because we improved.
There's still traffic on 405, though.
There is still traffic, yes, but it's better. You can make a difference, and this made a difference. Now, revoking California's ability to set its own standards could stymie that downward trend in California's air pollution. California Governor Gavin Newsom said in a statement, the Trump administration has abdicated its responsibility to the rest of the world on cutting emissions and fighting global warming and is acting on a political vendetta. It's a move that could have devastating consequences for our kids' health and the air we breathe if California were to roll over. But we will not. We will fight this latest attempt and defend our clean car standards. Well, this is supposed to be announced tomorrow that they're dismantling this. And, you know, it just it gets to the point where you just want to throw up your hands because it seems like all we're doing, people who are opposed to this kind of thing and Democrats in general, it's just filing motions and lawsuits and things like that. Which, you know, they do work, but it just seems like it's not active enough. Like, we're not Hong Konging it, you know what I mean? Where people in Hong Kong show up every weekend to fight for their rights, and it's like we don't care. And I know we do care, it's just I feel like we're kind of wandering around wondering where we're supposed to go next. We need to start getting our act together and fighting back against these things and not giving Trump all these victories, because this is another victory. And how can you say this is a good thing when it's irrefutable that it's going to lead to more pollution and more of a greenhouse effect? You know,
yeah.
Getting rid of standards, emission standards, should just be universally seen as a bad thing. And in many countries, it is.
Yeah, I would say anybody who thinks this is a good idea, find the nearest tailpipe and wrap your lips around it.
You know, okay.
Take a deep breath.
While I agree with you, Kyle, it's just statements like that are kind of what lead to the divisiveness.
Well, okay, let me rephrase that. I think this is wholly anti-consumer. Because
okay, good.
How do mileage, all that mileage does is increase the amount of gallons you're purchasing. And across the board, that just puts millions of dollars, billions even, into the hands of the fossil fuel companies who themselves are actively, thwarting efforts to move ahead. And they've completely, blew their chance to take their existing infrastructure and convert to anything close to biofuels or some kind of renewable liquid fuel. I don't even know what it is. They never put any money into it. They just spent all their time reinvesting in technologies like fracking that destroy water. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they really blew it, and now people are, I think, rightly upset. And they pull this with the emission standards. Really, this just enriches in the most blatant anti-consumer way. Like, what person, aside from pollution, maybe you don't believe in benzene, okay? You think you won't get leukemia. Your white blood cells are like white nationalist blood cells. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. You have far-right blood cells. Far-white blood cells.
Keep going with this, girl.
Whatever.
I'm just going to sit back and watch.
I'm punchy today. So my point is, say you don't believe in pollution, you think benzene toxicity won't kill you, fine. I'll let you live that short life, I think, but whatever. But my point is, just in your pocketbook, you get less mileage, and you spend more to get to work. That is anti-consumer. How does the consumer benefit? How can you unless you have an appreciable amount of stock in Exxon or whatever fossil fuel company you want to pick, ConocoPhillips, you name it,
unless you are actually benefiting as a shareholder, why does more gallons for less miles work out for you as a consumer? Yeah. People should be irate just on that level.
Yeah, I completely agree, because the logic just doesn't seem to add up here. And I guess it becomes more like, well, it's the other side, whoever they happen to be, wants something else, so they must be wrong. And this is something this transcends any political boundaries. This is good for all of us to have clean air and to not be belching oil and gasoline every place. And that's why, you know, that whole Saudi Arabian thing is not something that we should be so caught up in. The fact of the matter is, I just mentioned it briefly a few minutes ago. Nobody was killed, as far as I know. Nobody's been reported killed. Saudi oil production has been screwed up a bit. I don't care. Maybe we shouldn't be using so much of it. And, the wars they're having over there, they're unjust wars. And occasionally, you know, the underdog is going to strike back. And good for them when they strike back. And if Iran is involved, well, you know what? Why are we involved? Saudi Arabia is a brutal, horrible regime. They are no allies of us, but they get so much in funding, in weaponry, in everything. Iran is another horrible regime, but for some reason they're our enemies, and we broke the deal with them, and they're obviously upset by that, and they're being hurt by the what I consider to be illegal sanctions because they broke the deal that we imposed upon them. The whole region is messed up. And, you know, the less we have to do with it, the better. But one thing is for certain, we do not need to keep using these polluting technologies. We are making such good progress. I mean, when I go outside and I see solar farms and I see wind turbines, that's a good thing. I see it in Europe. I see it on Long Island. We need more of that. We need more of that kind of energy that does not pollute, that's renewable. And we can do it. It's got nothing to do with politics. This is not a left versus right thing. This is just humanity surviving. But treat with suspicion anybody who tries to tell you otherwise, who wants you to keep going back to the things that have been proven to hurt us. So imagine someone who continues to push cigarettes on you when we all know they kill you.
And think about...
we don't trust them anymore. Why should we trust the other people?
Absolutely. And, I mean, think about this if you are a Gold Star family. If you are a veteran. If you know veterans, if you know anyone who fought or died in the Mideast, think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're propping up with the blood, with your family, propping these industries up, these toxic industries.
Well, that's what it's really about, is the industry.
Absolutely. So when we get all misty about our troops and our fighting and all of that, let's think very carefully about the interests that entangled us in this. And I would go down the vertical integration, not just fossil fuel companies. I will grant the automobile companies having formed a pact with California in that they are going to abide by California's standards if this standard is taken away. I'll say that again.
They've said that.
Three, I think, or four automobile manufacturers have made a pact with California to bypass whatever federal rule changes go on and adhere to the previous CAFE standards.
Can we have someone in the control room look up what those three manufacturers are so we can read them off before the end of the hour and give them some props for actually having the guts to do that?
Yes.
No, we can't? Why not?
Oh, no?
They're useless. They don't do anything for us.
Okay, that we can't say that finger on the air.
Oh, wait, that's not even the station. I'm looking into another building. Sorry.
But I, as much as I give them props, they are absolutely out for their shareholders' interests, and I think there is culpability with the manufacturers as well, because they are responsible for the power plants that actually combust the oil and the gasoline, the benzene, all the lovely chemicals that you don't want in your body. They're designing their engines this way, and I have a particular annoyance with V-Dub and the TDI fiasco, and in general, the hostility of common rail
fuel injection technology, particularly with the use of biodiesel, which a lot of buses and municipalities use. But that aside, I mean, that was just a toe in the water to design internal combustion engines to work with less toxic fuels. And that's really the goal. I don't think you're going to get, you know, carbon neutral, that's a whole other discussion, a little bit harder than food versus fuel, that's a whole other bio discussion. But just making your liquid fuel less toxic. The manufacturers creating engines that only use certain types of low sulfur diesel and petroleum products, basically closely designing engines to really only work with what the energy companies produce. I think there's a responsibility there, and I think that those vehicle manufacturers owe it, I think, to society to do these kinds of packs and to create new power plants that don't at all use products from these energy companies. They ought not to continue to be customers of them. It is not where people want to go, and I think that's the very least they could do for having designed so many engines that are combusting this stuff.
Thanks a lot. I just got the information I asked for. I can't believe I actually got something I asked for. But, yeah, get this. Four automakers, I can't believe I'm even reading this, they face a Department of Justice investigation and possible lawsuit because they conspired to build more fuel-efficient cars and help make California's air cleaner. It's literally what they are being accused of. BMW, Ford, Honda, and Volkswagen are the reported targets of a Justice Department investigation into whether they skirted federal competition laws by agreeing with each other to agree to stricter emission standards in California. We are living in bizarro world where actually working to reduce emissions gets you in legal trouble.
Absolutely. It's a crazy world. And just to continue on with the story, the gist of the article, it goes on to explain that the CAFE standards were adopted by, I think, a dozen other states. And so what this does with the auto market in the U.S. is it bifurcates, it creates a dichotomy between states that want cleaner and more fuel-efficient vehicles and states that do not. So it's going to split the auto market in the U.S. in half. At a time when we're actually seeing the adoption and the marketing of electric and other forms of clean power plants, I would like to see that go further. I'd like to see hybridization, very tiny combustion engines that can perhaps charge at very low displacement, maybe with very complex emissions control stuff. There's so much we could do with technology. I mean, it's just not even getting the investment dollars and the support that it needs, and look how much we've done in the face of that. So I applaud these manufacturers, and I think that so much more is possible, and it's just amazing we've come as far as we have, and that so much of this malfeasance and corruption is just... it's obvious. I mean, you ask any third grader, they know about this. They're not joking. They know that, you know, gasoline makes you go bananas. Their parents tell them.
Don't just go up to a third grader and ask them, though. That might be seen as creepy. But, but if you do find yourself in a conversation with a third grader, they probably know a lot more than you think they do, and probably know a lot more than many of us. You have a choice, too. It's not just sitting on the sidelines and watching all the bad news that's happening and the lawsuits being filed. You can decide you're not going to buy something that pollutes. You can decide, I'm going to take a step and get something a little bit more energy efficient. It'll pay for itself after a while.
Like a bicycle.
Well, that, too. But I'm saying as far as if you are going to buy a car of one sort or another, you can buy something that is less polluting, but you can also do things like install solar panels on your house, despite what the Trump administration is trying to do to discourage that. And ask yourself again, why? Why would anybody discourage this kind of thing? These are indisputably good for the environment. They're good for technology. They're good for our future. The only way you could ever consider that to be bad is if you have a vested interest in the status quo, in the oil industry, in the things that have been demonstrated time and time again to be bad for us. So let's stop allowing that to just continue unfettered. There's no excuse for it.
Just one last remark. The personal choices, that can extend to larger organizations, too. If you run a fleet in a company, if you have a say on a city council as far as what kind of public transport the city is going to invest in, all of those efforts are worthwhile in every city and township across our country, and it's really crucial that people start getting at least a say in these small choices, because every bit of that goes towards awareness and an emphasis on the right way to solve some of these problems. I think I read a couple stories too recently about school bus systems, speaking of students, and a lot of bus systems are looking at electrifying school buses because they themselves are diesel, and with young vulnerable populations boarding and deboarding buses constantly, they're exposed to these emissions, and those are the kinds of things. So if you're in a school district, find out what your school district is doing about electrifying buses. Those changes are as important as your personal changes, because they're small organizations that may not be getting input such as you may be able to provide. So just don't forget those as well.
That is an excellent point, because you might find yourself in a position where you could actually have a say in a decision that is made. So, yeah, if you're in charge of where do we get our next line of school buses, or, you're just part of a complex that does that, your opinion might actually make a difference. And it doesn't stop there. If you're a student going to a school, a letter from you could make the difference, could make somebody think, could inspire somebody else who has the power to make that decision. We all have to do things like this. Our voices do count. It might not seem like they count, and you're certainly told over and over again that they don't count, especially in social media where, you get dwarfed by all the celebrities. You think you're insignificant, but you're not. You're not. All you have to do is write something, and it matters. Hey, I'm gonna prove it. I'm gonna read a letter that we got, which definitely is something that we always enjoy. And you can write to us otw@2600.com. Maybe tell us something environmental you did that made a difference, either in your house, in your car, in your place of work, in your school, or someplace else. Hi, Emmanuel and Kyle, longtime listener. You were chatting about the weirdness in the UK Parliament that you were watching. Oh boy, it was. How do you say the word
prorogation.
Okay. All right. So prorogue. That's how you say
prorogation.
It? Prorogued.
Prorogation.
That's how I'm going to say it.
Prorogued.
It's probably not right. For the time up to the Queen's speech launching the new parliament, I guess, sometime in October. Now, the ritual you saw is truly very weird and is usually very solemn, as opposed to the rowdiness displayed by MPs this time. And I really, if you can find this on YouTube or someplace, definitely watch what happened when Parliament was suspended a couple of weeks ago. Now, the weird woman in black with the stick is the Black Rod. I'm not kidding. That is what it says. And you are right. She is the Queen's representative. The Queen must be invited into the Commons. When her representative, the Black Rod is, I feel like I'm reading some kind of strange British science fiction. When the Black Rod is seen to be approaching, the MPs slam the door and lock it. I'm not kidding. They slam the door and lock it. The Black Rod must then bang on the door with the rod three times, I think, and then the speaker will ask who it is. And the black Rod must say that there is a message from the Queen. How do you not love England? How do you just not love their just insanity? The doors are then unlocked and opened, and the Black Rod may enter. Now, the reason for this weirdness is because in 1642, King Charles I burst into the Commons with soldiers to try to arrest troublemaker MPs who had already fled. This is the beginning of the English Civil War, fought between the Royalists, or the Cavaliers, and the Parliamentarians, known as the Roundheads. Yes, that's what they were known as. That raged across England from 1642 until 1651, and it all ended in the beheading of King Charles I and the start of the disastrous Commonwealth, conceived by the Roundhead leader Oliver Cromwell. Yes, and that's how it all began. The ritual is all about preventing a dispute. The Black Rod will say her piece and then invite the Commons to the House of Lords to close that house too. The Black Rod's assistant will take the scepter of state, which has been in the House since the opening of Parliament, and lead a procession out of the House. It was this that was interrupted by the protest this week or a couple of weeks ago. I'm not a historian or anything like that, so the details may be a little off, but that is the basic story of what you saw. It's a sad, sad day for the mother of all parliaments to be silenced by the Prime Minister like this. Keep up the interesting radio. Signed, Neil. Thank you so much, Neil, for that very informative letter. And I love hearing from our listeners, especially listeners in other countries that know things that we don't about how they work. I'm inspired by the whole thing, because it feels like democracy is working there. There was a court in Scotland that said that Boris Johnson's attempt to shut down Parliament was illegal. So it's being heard right now. In fact, today was the first day of the hearing at the British Supreme Court. And if you really want to be intimidated, go to the British Supreme Court.
Yeah, the accusation is he misrepresented the situation to the Queen.
Yeah, so they have one of three decisions. They can either say, it's none of our business, we're not going to get involved, or they can say, it is our business, and what he did was lawful, or they can say, it's our business, and it's unlawful. You know, it just feels like they move a lot faster there. We're still having hearings on whether or not Trump has to be
whether he obstructed justice or not.
Yeah, whether he obstructed justice or basically impeachment, all that kind of thing. And you know, we're no further along after 3 years. We're no further along. And in 1 week, they're at the Supreme Court, and it's possible that their prime minister could be in a lot of trouble for what he did. And he has to answer for that. And he has to be on the floor when all these arguments are happening. He has to defend himself. We don't have that. We protect people way too much.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, a lot of the leadership has been able to do just avoid reporters, not have session, Senate or House proceedings. Of course, you know, you have August recess and so on. But it's really... For a session or post session that has been described as a constitutional crisis, it seems like a bad moment to take a break. I don't know. That may be just my opinion, but and I find it deeply ironic that they're having to hold hearings about obstruction and are being prevented from having their questions answered, subpoenas met. I think two people didn't show up today.
Okay, so tell me what happened.
That sounds like obstruction to me, but whatever.
What happened today? There was a particularly raucous hearing on Capitol Hill.
It was worthwhile and interesting, and the House Judiciary, led by Jerry Nadler, and let's see, the chairman is Collins from Georgia, and then his pal Jim Jordan was up there. A bunch of other ranking members were there as well. I think they had several votes during the course of it, and so they had like 19 Democrats, and multiple times during the thing, I think the minority representatives of the House Judiciary voted to adjourn the hearing before it even started, or, you know, after like half of the first question. It was really impossible for the rules of order to actually feel. It just felt like a joke after a while.
They had Corey Lewandowski up there.
I'm sorry, yeah, that's who was testifying. It was Corey Lewandowski, and then two other people that were involved in basically a moment when Don McGahn and Jeff Sessions refused to get rid of the special counsel, mm-hmm. and Don McGahn and Jeff Sessions specifically, Don McGahn said, hey, don't even talk to Jeff Sessions, and Jeff Sessions said, hey, I recuse myself, and then Trump dictated, I think not allegedly, I think this is in the Mueller report, dictated something to Corey Lewandowski, who at the time was not working for the administration in any capacity. He was not an advisor. He was a private citizen, did not even have credentials for the White House, and Trump wanted to use him as a proxy to send a transcribed statement to Jeff Sessions, mm-hmm. To get Jeff Sessions to unrecuse himself and talk about how very unfairly...
Let me just stop you here. Already, I'm rolling my eyes because it just seems like we're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. We're not actually getting anywhere. Yeah, it's another impeachment investigation, but for God's sake, get it on with it already. If you're going to impeach the guy, impeach the guy.
It was basically about splitting hairs over what obstruction looks like while being obstructed.
Uh-huh.
So it was...
Well, if you're not going to impeach the guy, obstruct the guy in whatever way you can. Surround the damn White House. Like, have sit-ins, chant. You know, basically make it impossible for them to get anything done. The way they do it. The way they do it when they cheat and lie and do all... I'm not saying do that, but So you see how democracy is thwarted.
Yeah.
How they have secret votes in houses where they tell the Democrats we're not going to have a vote, and then they do it and they get their way, and oh wow, yeah, you outsmarted us, and I guess we're out of power for another 2 years.
Yeah. So and he continued to would only respond very sparsely, kept citing a letter that the White House had given him, basically saying his conversations were privileged, even though it wasn't his privilege to exercise. And he was not an official advisor or member of the cabinet, so it really doesn't apply, but they were trying to have it apply. And it kind of rang hollow after a while.
Was anything accomplished?
Well, it very well may be. I mean, it was raised by Eric Swalwell of California and several of the majority in the House Judiciary and Oversight Committee there that Lewandowski may be held in contempt, and I hope he is.
I hope so, too. I hope somebody's dragged away and pays a price.
Going to the clink.
But, you know, you gotta go for the people that are really guilty, the ones that are really obstructing and causing harm. But you have to prove the case. You have to do a good job. You can't be timid. And that's what Democrats always are. They're always so timid. What if we offend the people who will never agree with us? For God's sake, they have to be stronger than this. The Republicans know how to do this. That's how they keep winning. Democrats have to learn that, and I hope, you know, at some point they do, before next year. Okay, that's going to do it for us tonight. Good conversation, Kyle. And
thank you.
We'll be back next week. otw@2600.com is our email address if you want to join the conversation. Hey, we lost a giant in the music. We actually lost a couple of giants. We lost Rick Alcasek from the Cars, but we also lost this musical genius, Daniel Johnston. Can't believe it, listening to him for decades. Going to go out with a song you might not have heard from him, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
I'm moving on, I'm getting out, I feel the monster. That is behind, they have been kind, I feel the monster. I know it's right, I've won the fight, I feel the monster. Let it be said, when I am dead, I feel the monster. They put me down, throw my name around, but I have found a good. Right to the end, I was my friend, I killed a monster. I almost lost, I paid the cost, I killed a monster. Angels came down right all around, I killed a monster. Blood on the ground, there was no sound, I was the winner. They put me down, throw my name around, but I have found a good thing. I've killed a monster.